Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
What stood in the way time and time again was collective bargaining. We've got over 1,000 municipalities, 424 school districts, about 72 counties in this state, all of which need to have the power to be able to offset what's going to happen in Wisconsin next week, just like New York and California, everybody else has been doing, and that's cutting billions of dollars from local governments.
If Arabs across the Middle East and Northern Africa are saying, we are all Egypt here in the United States, are we all Wisconsin? That's what new Republican Governor Scott Walker of Wisconsin suggested on Fox News Sunday. I'm Amy Eddings, sitting in for Brian Lehr on this President's Day. Joining us to talk about the latest in Madison, Wisconsin, is John Dickerson, chief political correspondent at Slate. Welcome back to WNYC, John.
Good morning, Amy. How are you?
Fine, thanks. Governor Walker wants to not only have state employees contribute more to their health care and pensions, he wants to limit collective bargaining rights to just salaries. He also wants to end automatic dues checkoffs, and he wants to require union members to vote every year on whether they want to stay in their union. So really, is this just about cutting costs, as Walker says?
Well, it's a hard case to make. There are, as you point out, three arrows aimed at unions, and some would argue, in addition to the bargaining that can be done on wages, is actually capped or related with the ceiling based on inflation. So, in other words, there's not much bargaining that can happen if that's capped too. Walker has been making his case, but the question is whether this is shared sacrifice or using the crisis of the moment to really dismantle unions to the extent that other Republican governors are on the hotline with Walker looking for guidance and lending moral support. It certainly supports the idea that this is more of an ideological crusade to dismantle unions and more than just asking union members to share their share of the load.
And is it all unions? I understand there are some exemptions in his bill for police and firefighters unions, which supported him in the November elections.
That's right. And so you could see traditionally where this has happened or when these kinds of battles have taken place, whether the firemen and policemen have supported the governors. It's usually been one of the pushbacks is don't hurt first responders. And so in this case, he has exempted those unions. And as you point out, they supported his campaign.
And do you know exactly which of the criteria that he's putting forward he's exempting them from?
I don't. I think that it's, well, no, I don't.
Okay. Certainly unions have been the punching bags for elected officials talking about balancing budgets here in New York City. Mayor Bloomberg is pressing Albany for pension and benefit changes, especially with a $12,000 annual benefit that's going to about 30,000 police and firefighters under a deal made 40 years ago. Governor Chris Christie of New Jersey has been seeking changes to teachers' pensions and benefits. He's set to outline his budget plan tomorrow. How real is this threat to unions? Aren't we talking about establishing new tiers for new hires that will affect future budgets? So how does this discussion really help with today's budget battle?
Well, it depends how these individual measures are shaped. And to the extent that it's a shot at the ability to collectively bargain or organize and raise money, then it's a real threat to unions because it goes at the organizing capabilities and sort of the structural foundation of unions. To the extent that it's just a question of having unions, changing the relationship on benefits, union members would argue, well, those benefits are hard won, and those benefit improvements or deals were made when wage increases were not offered. In other words, so that this is to help people understand it, they say, this is like actually cutting pay. These were negotiations that were worked out over time. And I think to the extent that what Walker and others would say is that the reason this has to do with budgeting is that it gives, in the clip you played at the beginning, it gives governments more flexibility in doing the things they need to do to deal with their deficit problems, and that they're hamstrung by collective bargaining. And without that flexibility, they, says Walker, you have to end up firing people instead of reshaping benefits, which makes them more draconian. Now, that of course is his view.
John Dickerson, chief political correspondent at Slate, here with me, Amy Eddings, sitting in for Brian Lehrer on this President's Day, and Nick from Cliffside Park, New Jersey. You're on WNYC. Good morning, Nick.
Good morning. You know, I mean, from what I heard on the Rachel Maddow show, the deficit for this particular fiscal year was approximately $150 million, which is about what they took out of taxes for the rich people in Wisconsin. That was their immediate agenda. And then just by coincidence, the hole that they have to fill in the budget is about $150 million. So this whole crisis is manufactured. Of course, they have a longer-term deficit, but so does every state in the country. If you were to use the rationale that Walker is using in Wisconsin, it would mean that every state and local union in the nation should be destroyed, which is what he wants to do. This is a Republican agenda. It's a strategy that's worked out from Chris Christie. The Koch brothers are behind it, and the whole right-wing infrastructure of corporatism and the wealthy. This is a watershed moment in American history. If this is allowed to succeed, if Obama and the Democrats do not go to the mats on this one, the quality of life in America will further deteriorate and will become closer and closer to the kind of third world country that we used to be back in the robber baron age.
Nick, thanks.
That's how heavy this is.
Thanks for your comment, Nick. John, a lot there from
sure.
Nick. I'm wondering where you position this fight. Is it akin to what we saw with the air traffic controllers in the 80s under Ronald Reagan, for example?
Well, let me just actually, I think it's worth taking a whack at the claims there. I think the Rachel Maddow piece he cites is based on some figures from the Legislative Fiscal Bureau in Wisconsin. If you read the tables of the Legislative Fiscal Bureau, you can interpret them, I think, incorrectly based on the reporting of people in that area, that there is a surplus here. There is not. The Milwaukee Journal Sentinel has done some reporting on this, as has Polyfact, in checking the claim that this is a fake budget crisis. There is, in fact, a budget deficit. With respect specifically to the governor's tax cuts, he did, in fact, push those tax cuts, but those are tax cuts for the fiscal years 2011 to 2013. Those cuts aren't even in effect yet, so they can't be part of this current problem. Now, so that's just a math question. So the notion that there's a fake deficit is not correct. Now, whether the actual deficit is being used to do more than necessary with respect to dismantling unions, well, that's a matter that's open for debate. To your question about the about the air traffic controllers, for Republicans, you know, unions have been hamstringing both state budgets but also private industry, and so as just a matter of ideology, they are anxious to do what they can to break up the unions because they think it's harmful, you know, in both that it grows government and that it hampers private enterprise and leads to these budget deficits because business can't operate, in their view, as freely as they would otherwise, and that limits their ability to make profits and create revenues that would then presumably shrink deficits. So,
beyond the ideological debate here, John, isn't there a very real fiscal problem, especially going forward as baby boomers age and retire, of unsustainable pension and health care benefits?
Absolutely. Oh, of course there is. And that's why the question here in trying to figure out whether this policy and these policies in any of these states are worthwhile is whether what's being done is the necessary kind of trimming and benefits reshaping that needs to happen in order to deal with those long-term pension costs that are like entitlements at the federal level in terms of their ballooning quality, mm-hmm. And how much of it is you going beyond that. And that's, you know, that has to be worked out in individual states with the governors and their legislatures. So you're right. I mean, you can go overboard in saying that because a Republican governor may have an ideological feeling about unions, that he or she has no standing to try and take care of these enormous pension costs.
Amy Eddings with John Dickerson, chief political correspondent at Slate.com. Here's what Governor Walker had to say about one of the elements of this proposal, his desire to end automatic union fee paychecks deductions. Let's listen.
If we're going to ask our state and local workers who are doing a great job to pay a little bit more, to sacrifice to help to balance this budget, we should also give them the flexibility of saying that for those members, for those workers who don't want to be a part of that union, who don't want that deduction each month out of their paycheck, they should be able to get that $500, $600, or in some cases $1,000 back that they can apply for their health care and their pension contribution.
So, listeners, if you're in a union, especially a public employees union, would you be in favor of opting out of your union so you can use your union dues for something else, like groceries? Give us a call at 212-433-9692, 212-433-WNYC. John, this sounds, this to me feels like it falls under the ideological part of what Governor Walker is trying to do, as opposed to something that's going to help him balance the budget in Wisconsin.
Right. Yes, I think that's right. I think, and again, this is where, if we're trying to find out where that line is, what's reasonable in terms of shared sacrifice, and what's overreaching in order to pin back something with some group with whom you have ideological differences, this does seem to fall into that category. Or it can fall into another ideological category, which is a more broad conservative viewpoint that your dollars as a human being are an extension of your liberty, and that you should always be able to deal with those dollars however you choose, and so that this kind of automatic deduction should go away, and that each year you should sort of have more liberty by having more control over your money. That's more of a broad philosophical point, and again, it has nothing to do with deficits specifically.
In our informal, unofficial, thoroughly unscientific opinion poll up now on itsafreecountry.org, we're asking about Governor Walker's idea of opting out of monthly or automatic dues checkoffs in your paycheck. And we ask, should union members be able to get their money back and apply it to their health care and their pension costs? We've got somebody saying, A is yes, union members should have the flexibility to opt out. And answer B is no, Walker's plan is plain old union busting. So go to itsafreecountry.org and weigh in. John, tell me what's going on with Democratic lawmakers in Madison. I understand they're persona non grata. They're out of the state even. I'm hearing that they're in a bar in Illinois somewhere. tell me about this, and how long can they remain out of the state capitol, and why are they going to such lengths to disappear?
Well, they're going to such lengths because if there's not a quorum present, they can't have a vote on this, on these measures. Now, the governor and Republican lawmakers have said, well, they can move forward on non-revenue. In my understanding is they can move forward on non-revenue matters of business. Now, that may not mean too terribly much, but if they're out of the state, there's not a quorum. This vote can't take place. The Republicans would win if there were a quorum. Now, so the question is, what's next? Does the governor send the, you know, state troopers, or I guess, you know, the point of getting out of the state is that the state troopers have limited authority in Illinois or Iowa or wherever they happen to be hiding out. The question is whether the governor's line, which is that these Democratic lawmakers are shirking their duties, whether that starts to take on any purchase, and whether they look like they're not being reasonable. Their argument, of course, is that it's governed that the governor is not being reasonable. The unions have said they'll give in on these pension and health care benefits, but that they want to retain their collective bargaining rights. And the governor said, no, I won't go for that. And then a Senate Republican lawmaker said, well, what if we suspend collective bargaining for just 2 years to get us through these long-term budget issues? Hmm. And the governor said, no, I'm not going to do that either. Now, so, you know, the question is here, if the general argument is, in tough times, everybody has to sacrifice and sort of meet the other guy halfway, who gets blamed for not acting in good faith? And lawmakers may get blamed for skipping town, but the governor may also get blamed for being completely inflexible when there have been some, compromises put on the table.
Amy Edding sitting in for Brian Lehrer, speaking with John Dickerson, chief political correspondent at Slate. And Martha from Flushing, you're on WNYC. Good morning, Martha.
Good morning, Amy. I am a member of United University Professions, which is the union for SUNY professors and other professional workers. I've been a member of that union ever since I became a professor at SUNY. And why on earth any public sector employee would want to give up union membership in favor of getting a few hundred dollars more in their paycheck from the union dues that they would save, I cannot begin to imagine. Over the 20 years I've been in this union, I've definitely benefited not only from the strength of having a union, but also in terms of benefits that I've been provided. There was a time in the early 90s when we didn't get a raise for about 3 years, and that would have gone on forever had we not had the ability to bargain collectively.
Martha, thanks for your call. Mm-hmm. Appreciate it.
You bet.
John, this is what Governor Walker is what he's talking about, opting out of the union entirely or just not having that automatic dues deduction, that somebody can still be in the union. It just isn't an automatic payroll deduction, and they would be billed separately for their union dues.
I believe it's the latter.
So you could still, Martha could still be in her union, or people like Martha could still be in their union. It's just that the union doesn't have that option of automatically having that money flow in from paycheck to paycheck, that they have to do a little more work to collect it from their members.
Right, and it would be the governor's contention if the benefits are so obvious, then it shouldn't be a problem for unions. But I believe that's the nature of the bill here. I think the going back to your original point, the problem people have is that this is being put forward as an emergency fiscal measure, mm-hmm. and again those provisions are pretty distanced from the kind of measures in a bill that you would think, you know, would have to do with immediate fiscal crisis.
I just want to point out, and we will not be able to get to the rest of these calls because of time, but most folks calling in are saying absolutely not. They would not give up their union dues checkoff in favor of having that money in their pocket to do with as they wish. So that's our thoroughly informal, unofficial, unscientific opinion poll. You can also register your thoughts online at itsafreecountry.org. Very briefly, John, in the time we have left, I want to pivot and turn our attention to Washington, where Republicans are also aggressively backing cuts to government spending, so much so there could be a government shutdown. House Speaker John Boehner has said there will be no emergency extensions to keep the government operating after March 4th without spending cuts. What's the latest? Where do we stand on this? Does it look like we're going to have a showdown here on a shutdown?
We'll have a showdown on a shutdown, but I think it's feeling over the last day or so like the pressure may be off. It's hard to detangle some of this, but I think Boehner probably would like that comment back, if for no other reason than it got in the way of what they were hoping their message would be going into the recess for President's Day, which is that Republicans could claim they made good on their claim to cut government for this year and talk to their conservative voters and say, look, we did what we said we were going to do. It's been muddied a bit by this question of a shutdown. Democrats have been holding that specter up because it's quite unpopular. Everybody has memories of how the Republicans got tarred with it in the mid-90s when government was shut down. And basically, the Republican leaders took the 87 freshmen, many of them Tea Party-backed candidates, and had a meeting with them at the end of last week and said, look, there's not going to be a government shutdown and because it's just too politically toxic. And that was an effort to say to those very excited members who are really raring to cut spending that we're not going to do this. And so what may happen is that there will be a temporary extension of government funding. The deadline is March 4th. There will be a short temporary extension while the details get worked out, and then there will be a sort of longer-lasting extension for funding of government, and then we're going to have the bigger fight on budget, which will be future funding of the government. But so we'll have what in Washington jargon will be called a temporary CR, a temporary continuing resolution that will just do a little bit of a funding here, and it may require Speaker Boehner to modify the strong claim he made last week.
So you think this is but isn't the mood different than 1995, especially with Tea Partiers, many of whom say they don't want to be reelected? They came in, these freshmen came in to office to do this job, to make the hard, quote-unquote hard decisions, cut government spending. Do you think the mood is different about a government shutdown this year than it was in 1995?
Well, in part, I mean, and certainly among some members, there is the view that's been expressed, fine, let's shut the government down. It brings all of this to a head. I think, and based on my interviews with people in Republican leadership, is not something they want to see. There is, you know, the Tea Party members, while they play an important role in Republican politics, they are not the sum total of the thing that Republican leaders have to worry about, and the Republican Party, you know, they're trying to avoid the mistakes of that previous Republican leadership in the mid-90s, and this is one of the mistakes they want to avoid. And it'll be a tough balancing act for John Boehner and the other Republican leaders in the House to both say to their conservative members, look, we have to be prudent here. We all have the same goal of cutting government, but let's not do something that obscures our goal by making people think we're being reckless and overreaching. And that's a very difficult conversation he's going to have to make. And the reason they're going to have to compromise a little bit is because they don't have control of the Senate and the White House. And so they're going to have to work something out to get the votes in the Senate. There will be government. There will be reductions in government spending. It's just it won't be as great as the House wants. And how John Boehner manages the difference between those two numbers will be his key task over the next, pretty much next 2 years.
John Dickerson, chief political correspondent at Slate.com. Thanks so much for joining us, John.
Thanks for having me.
Coming up, we will continue our talk about budgets, this time turning to Albany, where Governor Cuomo's Medicaid redesign team has just about a week left to propose cuts to Medicaid. Stay tuned.